Welcome to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast updating you on the latest IT news to come out of and around Redmond. I'm your host, Michael Domingo. Thanks for downloading and listening to the show. In this week's episode, U.S. judge voids the Microsoft penalty to Unilock, the federal government gets ready for Windows 7, Windows XP mode and Data Protection Manager 2010 beta are released, and IBM offers a server planning tool. We'll get right to it after this quick musical interlude, right here on Redmond Radio. Welcome to Redmond Radio. I'm your host, Michael Domingo, and as always, I welcome your feedback on the show at mdomingo@1105media.com. That's M-D-O-M-I-N-G-O at 1105media.com. If you want to record a quick phone message to me, you can also call me at 949-265-1564. You can also catch the show on redmondradio.podbean.com. If you want to download the show automatically via iTunes, the Podbean version of the show always includes more information, and once in a while, I'll announce contests that are only available by looking at the description page at redmondradio.podbean.com. Redmond Radio listeners via the Podbean version can find out how to win an MCP Mag baseball cap, so check that out. Also, this week, find out about the free vouchers for the MCP exam. I'm giving away two of them for this contest. Let's get right to it and talk Redmond news. A trial judge last week voided a $388 million jury award to Unilock in its long-running intellectual property dispute with Microsoft. William E. Smith of the U.S. District Court representing Rhode Island essentially ruled that the jury was incapable of reaching that verdict, which included a finding of willful infringement of Unilock's software anti-piracy patent. Unilock went to trial charging that Microsoft's patented product activation system for XP, Windows Server 2003, and Office XP had infringed Unilock's patent. The case was originally filed at the end of 2003. Unilock makes physical device recognition technology that generates user identities from the computer hardware. It uses hashing algorithms to track the unique IDs of software licensees, and the technology employs a summation algorithm to generate the unique ID. The judge, in his decision and order, disagreed with the jury that Microsoft used summation algorithms in its product activation system that violated Unilock's patent. The judge stated in the documents, a simple comparison of MD5 as a whole to the algorithm Unilock's patent discloses clearly reveals non-equivalence. MD5 is the message digest algorithm that was used in Microsoft Office. The judge added that the jury was essentially incompetent in being able to understand the issue. The judge even disputed that Microsoft knew about the possibility of infringement. The inventor, Rick Richardson, had provided his concept to Microsoft for evaluation back in 1993, noting that parts were associated with a patent application, but this general reference cannot support finding a knowing risk of infringement of Claim 19, according to the judge. Unilock plans to file an appeal. Microsoft's security team didn't flinch this week, even as a proof-of-concept exploit for Windows Server Message Block version 2 was published on Sunday. Redmond said that its earlier released workaround for the vulnerability, which involves disabling SMB version V2, will suffice for now. The workaround was described in Microsoft's Security Advisory 975497, released last month. SMB V2 is a file-sharing protocol for Windows systems. In theory, exploiting the SMB V2 bug can lead to a worm outbreak on client-server systems that run a combination of Windows Vista, SP1 and SP2, client and Windows Server 2008, SP1 and SP2 operating systems. Windows 7 release candidate was also affected by the bug, according to the security advisory. Microsoft spokesperson Christopher Budd explained that the software giant is currently investigating the issue as part of its software security incident response process and working to develop a security update. He added that the published exploit code was addressed by Microsoft's security advisory and that the advisory's workaround would apply to this code as well. The proof of concept code was published on the Metasploit security test website by Stephen Feuer, a senior researcher at Harmony Security. David Eitel, CTO at security firm Immunity, congratulated Feuer for coming up with the code and speculated on whether a patch would arrive. If a patch arrives, it might show up in the security release scheduled for October 13th. Microsoft didn't say whether an SMB version 2 hotfix will arrive this month. Microsoft has been busy with a couple of big releases this week. Well, actually, in the last couple of weeks. A week ago Friday, Microsoft announced the release candidate 0 of Forefront Unified Access Gateway. The gateway lets IT pros set up and manage security for remote client connections into an organization's network. It's part of Microsoft's Forefront Enterprise Security product family. UAG was formerly known as Microsoft's Intelligent Application Gateway product. It reached its present RC0 status following a Beta 2 release in July. UAG provides security in conjunction with Windows Server 2008 R2 Standard or Enterprise Editions, according to Microsoft's release notes. It's particularly designed to work with the Direct Access feature in Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008 R2 that lets remote clients connect to a network without having to use a private virtual network. New features in the RC0 version include the ability to use Microsoft System Center Operations Manager to monitor critical components of UAG and Direct Access, according to a Microsoft Forefront blog. The blog also notes that it's now simpler to deploy an array of servers using the Management Console in Forefront UAG R0. The RC0 version also has a new import-export capability that can back up configurations. Microsoft's blog explains that you can even export an array configuration and import it into a standalone machine. Also released last week, Microsoft Security Essentials, Redmond's free consumer security software for PCs. The rollout of the anti-malware solution comes after 3 months of public beta testing limited to thousands of users. The software uses basic protection against viruses and spyware. The free MSE offering likely will compete with paid security offerings from McAfee and Symantec. MSE is sometimes described as a replacement for Windows Defender, a free app for Microsoft that just removes spyware. Apparently, the two security apps can exist side by side. MSE disables Windows Defender and users don't have to remove it, according to a June Microsoft forum post. MSE is available for download for use on genuine Windows-based PCs, according to Microsoft's announcement issued last Monday. The software works with the following operating systems: Windows 7, Vista, and XP using Service Pack 2 or 3. It's designed to use a small amount of CPU and memory resources and run on older PCs. MSE will also work with Windows XP mode, which is Microsoft's virtualized XP desktop that runs on Windows 7. MSE uses the same basic technology as Microsoft Security Solutions for Businesses. Microsoft currently offers a suite of non-free security solutions to businesses all under its Forefront brand. The company's offering for PC malware protection in the enterprise is called Forefront Client Security. The software likely won't meet most IT department requirements for security. MSE notably will not integrate with Microsoft Network Access Protection technology and Microsoft System Center Management products. It also can't be controlled via group policy settings. Also released last Thursday to OEMs, the final release version of Windows XP mode. Microsoft essentially hit its release to manufacturing milestone for Windows XP, signifying the time in which original equipment manufacturers can begin adding the bits to their Windows 7 RTM distribution packages. Alternatively, Windows XP mode will be available as a separate download for the general public on October 22nd, which is the general release date for new Windows 7-based PCs. Windows XP mode is a desktop virtualization supplement that works with Microsoft Virtual PC in Windows 7. It lets users run a complete copy of Windows XP Service Pack 3, along with associated XP-based applications, right on the Windows desktop. Windows XP mode only works with certain editions of Windows 7, namely Professional, Ultimate, and Enterprise. Microsoft designed Windows XP mode for small to medium organizations, particularly for those who want to maintain a legacy XP-based application while still migrating to Windows 7. For larger organizations that centralize the management of multiple PCs, Microsoft recommends using Microsoft Enterprise Desktop Virtualization. MedV is available to Microsoft volume licensing customers with software assurance and is part of the Microsoft Desktop Optimization Pack. Windows XP mode comes with some maintenance issues to consider, though. For instance, IT pros will have to ensure security separately from Windows 7. The virtualized Windows XP operating system can't be centrally managed through group policies. And the PC that runs Windows XP mode must have hardware virtualization capabilities, such as Intel VT or AMD V technologies. Also released last week, System Center Data Protection Manager 2010 Beta. The release follows a community technology preview by more than 50 Microsoft customers, according to Anand Kamat, Group Product Manager for the DPM team. DPM 2010 is a backup and data recovery tool formerly known as Zinger, or DPM V3 and part of the System Center Management product line. DPM 2010 will eventually succeed Microsoft's DPM 2007 Service Pack 1 product, which was released in January. The next version of DPM 2010 will be available in the first half of 2010, according to a Microsoft spokesperson. The beta includes a number of improvements over the previous release, according to Microsoft. DPM 2010 beta can protect virtual machines moved across cluster shared volumes on Windows Server 2008 R2, using Microsoft's Live Migration feature. This feature also extends to Windows Server 2008 and Hyper-V servers. DPM 2010 beta also provides centralized client protection for Windows-based PCs, from Windows XP to Windows 7 versions. With this release, the backup protection for laptop clients was completely built from scratch, according to Command. Backups can be set to take place while laptops are online or offline. The beta has an auto-grow feature that can extend the replica volume as the production data grows, according to a Microsoft blog. It also includes automatic error fixing of the replica volume via the auto-rerun or auto-CC functions. A single DPM 2010 server can support up to 100 servers, 1,000 laptops, or 2,000 databases, according to Microsoft. The beta extends protection to SQL Server 2008 and other Microsoft servers, as well as the upcoming Exchange 2010 and SharePoint 2010 servers. And then the last item before the break, Microsoft touted new capabilities in Microsoft Dynamics Nav 2009, particularly customization features enabled by Service Pack 1. The Nav 2009 SP1 became generally available on September 1st, but Microsoft began describing some of the benefits last week. Dynamics Nav 2009 is aimed at mid-market organizations and is one of four enterprise resource planning products offered by Microsoft and its partners. The new capabilities are designed around supporting a role-tailored user experience. SP1 brings new visualization and personalization capabilities, as well as a menu of enhanced features, to the Dynamics Nav 2009 suite. The new features include data entry enhancements, filter improvements, keyboard shortcut changes, and improved internet resource connections. Partners can also customize the user experience using Microsoft's Silverlight multimedia framework. The real differentiator in the package is the visualization process, according to R. Ray Wong, an enterprise strategy partner at Altimeter Group. Wong explained in a telephone interview, typically, specific visual configuration for microverticals takes place in the last mile. Prior to this release, smaller companies with 100 to 250 employees relied on partners to develop user interface enhancements. Now they have a much simpler platform to begin that process. Wong added that Microsoft's announcement shows its continued commitment to creating role-based personalized experiences critical for small to medium organizations. Dynamics Nav addresses the needs of a number of vertical markets, according to Guy Weismantle, Director of ERP Marketing at Microsoft. Explained Weismantle in an email, "We have a wide variety of vertical-specific partner solutions available for, but not limited to, customers in chemical manufacturing, consumer packaged goods, construction, food and beverage, high-tech industrial equipment manufacturing, public administration, specialty retail, and wholesale distribution." Wong said that each of the four Dynamics ERP lines addresses targeted vertical markets with a suite of applications. Microsoft is also moving closer to integrating social enterprise apps with its ERP products. We'll continue with more news in a second. Let's break for this message from 1105 Media. This one's sponsored by Quest Software. Check out a chapter from the Quest Software ebook, Quickly Recovering Deleted Active Directory Objects. The chapter gives you a sample on best practices to recover from accidental AD deletions, with the rest of the ebook recovering the limitations of native tools and the benefits of third-party solutions. Quest Software's Quickly Recovering Deleted Active Directory Objects is free in the mcpmag.com tech library. And welcome back to Redmond Radio. Before we continue with more news, how about another episode of IT Web Gems? I couldn't find anything much by way of regular old computer technology, but I did come across a few technical logical wonders, nonetheless, out on the web. One of the things I love is old technology, and looking back at some of those things, like the automobile, it's the same case with motion pictures, which debuted commercially back in October 6, 1889 by Thomas Edison. The debut of his Vitascope projector was an improvement along with other inventions that preceded it, such as the Lumiere Brothers cinematograph, which was a combination camera, film processor, and projector. Even as we make improvements over celluloid and sound, the basic concept is still there. One frame at a time makes the world go round. Fast forward to the same day in 1947. It's the first televised address by a president, this one being Harry Truman. World War II was still fresh in our minds and Europe was starving due to shortages. Truman made a plea to the American public to cut grain use to help its European allies, while the U.S. was implementing the Marshall Plan to aid in the European recovery. Also taking place this week, two technological marvels were in the air. In 1999, the SR-71 supersonic jet flew its last mission, while in 2004, Spaceship One made its maiden flight as the first privately funded commercial vehicle to reach true space flight. And that's it for IT Web Gems this week, which weren't really IT Web Gems, but maybe just techie Web Gems. Okay, I got one response over the last few weeks for the fiction contest, So check this out. I've got a new contest, and it's not just for Redmond Radio listeners. Right now, you can enter to win a free voucher for a Microsoft MCP exam. How, do you ask? Send me your thoughts on Windows 7, whether you plan to upgrade or not. If you do plan to upgrade, what I'm looking for is what features are making this a worthwhile upgrade in your book. For those who aren't upgrading, if you have a good reason for not doing so, the recession, the cost of Windows 7 upgrades, or whatever, I want to hear that too. So be sure to send me an email with your thoughts by October 19th, as I'll be compiling all entries into a mini feature on mcpmag.com to coincide with the software launch a few days later. All right, that's this week's IT Web Gems. Let's get back to some news. And we finish off this segment first with a look at Cisco, which issued 9 advisories for its Internet Network Operating System, the OS software for most of the company's routers and switches. The company issued 2 advisories for its Cisco Unified Communications Manager as well. The advisories came as part of the company's routine half-year patch cycle. In total, the 11 advisories cover 12 potential vulnerabilities. Of the advisories Cisco issued, 8 address vulnerabilities that could have left customers open to DOS attacks. According to the advisories, attackers could down a Cisco router or switch via a DOS attack by flooding them with H323 multimedia protocol-based packets, network time protocol packets, session initiation protocol packets, or packets carrying requests in a number of other protocols. The advisories note that mitigating against such attacks can be done largely by restricting the types of protocol packets that the hardware accepts to only those it requires to carry traffic. Cisco's workarounds for the H323 vulnerability, for instance, is to disable that service if the network is not carrying any traffic that uses that protocol. The patches being issued for these vulnerabilities, in effect, disable these protocols. Those who use these services, however, may have to look elsewhere for answers on how to fend off such attacks. Of the remaining patches, 2 dealt with faults in authentication controls, and 1 addressed a crafty attack method of exhausting a device's security keys. For these problems, Cisco has issued patches as well. Since March 2008, Cisco has been releasing non-critical security-related bug patches and advisories for iOS twice a year. The company will release the next round of security patches in March 24, 2010. Last week, IBM rolled out a free toolkit to help IT pros migrate their infrastructure to IBM products and use Microsoft's virtualization technology to consolidate servers. The Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit for IBM 1.0 was actually released late last month and is designed to run on a Windows-based computer. IBM developed the toolkit at its IBM Center for Microsoft Technologies, according to a Microsoft blog. The toolkit provides hardware information on IBM's System X and Blade Center technologies, as well as Microsoft's Hyper-V virtualization technology. The toolkit incorporates the Map Toolkit 4.0 setup package, which points to solutions in the Microsoft stack. It's designed for IT organizations that may lack systems management solutions. IBM's toolkit provides an estimate on how to use Microsoft's virtualization technology to consolidate server hardware. The toolkit will discover all computers within Active Directory and workgroup environments, according to Microsoft's blog. It then generates migration proposals based on the specific IT environment and calculates potential savings based on the Microsoft Virtualization ROI calculator. Last week, Microsoft updated 2 infrastructure planning and designing guides to help with server virtualization in data centers, including Windows Server Virtualization and System Center Virtualization Manager 2008 R2 and VMM 2008 guide. And finally, a group of software engineers led by 2 Google developers are working on a new language for the Java virtual machine. Dubbed NewOp, the project is an experimental new language that aims to promote good coding practices while discouraging bad ones, according to the group's website. Google software engineer Alex Eagle and software development coach Christian Gruber are leading the project. Neither would agree to be interviewed. NewOp is a side project, not sponsored by Google, Gruber said in an email. The goal of the NewOp project, according to the website, is to build dependency, injection, and testability into the language from the beginning, instead of relying on third-party libraries as do other languages. Initially, NewOp will run on the JVM. The source code will look like Java, and it will be offered under an Apache 2.0 license. Those who are interested in following NewOp closely are invited by the project owners and committers to join the mailing list at noop@googlegroups.com. And yes, that's this week's episode of Redmond Radio. As usual, I'd like to say thanks once again to all you listeners who continue to support Redmond Radio by streaming and downloading this program, and especially those who pass the show on to their colleagues. I'm Michael Domingo. I'll chat with you here next week, right here on Redmond Radio.